NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
The Flight Safety Detectives is bringing on a new sponsor, Piston Powered, a power-by-the-hour program for owners of piston-powered aircraft that can stabilize the long-term costs of owning your airplane.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. We are, again, spread across the country, kind of, sort of. John and I happen to be in Washington, D.C. this week, the week of the mid-air collision, or the week after the mid-air collision. And we'll be talking about both the mid-air and the Lear 55 that crashed in Philadelphia in an upcoming show that will be uploaded later this week. But for today, we have Strange Encounters of the Unknown. Todd has been doing a lot of research on a lot of these, quote, UFOs that have been sighted and have been following aircraft. And also, we're going to talk about drones and whether or not the drones are the UFOs or the UFOs are the drones. So, Todd, take it away, buddy.
Well, as all of you, many of you know, there was quite a bit of news about drones over New Jersey and New York doing all sorts of strange things, flying in all sorts of strange ways, including unusual size drones, unusual behaving drones, drones in groups. And of course, there was a lot of press coverage. There was on the order of 90 temporary flight restrictions issued by the FAA, which expired right before the new administration took over. And on January 28th, one day before the crash in D.C., there was a press conference, the first press conference, where the press secretary made a statement, a short one, which you'll see shortly, where she explained what those drones were about.
And before I turn to questions, I do have news directly from the President of the United States that was just shared with me in the Oval Office. From President Trump directly, an update on the New Jersey drones. After research and study, the drones that were flying over New Jersey in large numbers were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons. Many of these drones were also hobbyists, recreational, and private individuals that enjoy flying drones. In time, it got worse due to curiosity. This was not the enemy.
There are a few points about this short statement, which in my mind didn't make much sense. First, it seems inconceivable to me that any FAA organization would authorize having all sorts of drones flying day and night, sometimes in sensitive areas, without giving some sort of NOTAM, some sort of TFR, some sort of warning to the aviation community and the general public. And the silence on this from November, December to now, given the fact that this was supposedly done by the FAA, it would have been done under the previous administration. Given the recklessness of this, the fact that the aviation community would probably agree that it was reckless, they would have been well within their rights to rake the Biden administration over the coals left, right, and sideways. Yet there was absolutely nothing said about this. By the way, no press releases on the FAA website, no further explanation from any other branch of government other than the press secretary.
Interesting. You know, one of the big things, Todd, is especially if these drones are flying at altitudes higher than 400 feet. It's one thing to be a, quote, hobbyist or recreational pilot, if you will. You have to stay below 400 feet. But you and I are both 107 qualified, and flying at night requires a different set of standards and permissions or authorizations. And again, like you said, you don't just go out and willy-nilly fly a bunch of drones over populated areas for no apparent reason. And to say that it's research, what are you researching? How good you can look in someone's window, or chasing some bad guys? What? It makes no sense to me. And the bigger thing is, like you said, they didn't issue a NOTAM. If you have low flying aircraft, general aviation or commercial aircraft, you got to put up something that says, hey, between 10 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night, or 6 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock the next day, there's going to be drone activity in this particular piece of airspace, so that one, you either avoid it, or two, you're aware of the fact that, yeah, they'll be operating drones in this area, but they have a ceiling of 400, 600, or 1,000 feet, or whatever they're going to do. You don't just mysteriously go out there and, start flying this stuff, and then, well after the fact, really come up with some lame excuse that it was authorized.
Yeah, it smells like a government cover-up of some sort of program that they're developing.
Well, okay, that's great. Why would you test it over really an urban area? And what is it that you're looking for, or what is this research? I mean, if it's low altitude flying, go out and do it over the desert. Go set up a tent city. Go do whatever you want to do, but you don't do it over, populated areas of New York and New Jersey, for research, and not tell anybody. Because again, now you have the public who is concerned. They say it's not the bad guys. Well, who said that, and how was that vetted? And again, that just leads to the public distrusting government when the government comes out and says, hey, it was authorized, don't worry about it, even though the news media has been reporting on it for a month. Where were you a month ago?
Yeah.
Now I
Area
thought.
51. Here we come again. They moved it to New Jersey.
Yeah.
Now, on
So,
the whole New Jersey, New York mystery drone thing, I thought, let me go to my favorite resource in the FAA for reporting drones that are behaving badly, the UAS Sightings Report Database, which usually has things on the order of an aircraft was flying into an airport. They saw a drone at 1,400 feet, missed them by 500 feet. They might describe the drone as quadcopter, et cetera. A lot of garden variety foolishness with drones. Rare occasions it's not. So I looked at last quarters, which was released on January 21st, and I just scanned the ones that are in New York and New Jersey. I put them alphabetically and just went down for November, December, seeing what I could find. And I found 44 events, and all of them were fairly normal for this database. There was nothing really outstanding or outrageous about them. There was one where it was a report from like 18,000 feet, but it wasn't clear from the report whether what they saw was also at 18,000 feet or somewhere below. But alphabetically between New Jersey and New York happens to be New Mexico. There was only one report from New Mexico. I glance at it and my jaw drops. Let me just read the passage that was in there. Preliminary information from FAA Operations Las Vegas, Nevada, which is, excuse me, Las Vegas, New Mexico, which is somewhat east of Santa Fe. Albuquerque Air Traffic Control Center advised a Boeing 767-400 JFK to LAX reported 25 UAS from all surrounding directions while westbound at flight level 340. Okay, I don't know many drones that fly at flight level 340, and I don't know of any. I know of some systems the U.S. military has, the Triton and the Global Hawk, that could fly at that altitude. I've never heard of 25 of them being in the air at one time for any reason anywhere. War
In
or
close
peace,
proximity.
in close proximity. Let me go on. at 50 miles east northeast of Fort Union Vortac, which is in Las Vegas, New Mexico. The UAS appeared to be following the aircraft for approximately 1 hour. No evasive action taken, no radar primaries detected by facilities or partners, no law enforcement organization notification reported due to the broad area of event occurrence. Now, one of the things that got me really moving on this, I know from the past that there's a 45-day period where the FAA keeps most of its audio recordings. After that, they might write over them. And I thought, I'd better do a Freedom of Information Act request right now, because when I read this, this was like right after the DC accident, it was almost, it was like 40 days had passed. So I put a quick one out on the 31st, which is like day 41, I believe. And I put another one out today, which is day 44, saying basically to the FAA headquarters and to the Albuquerque center, you know, please save a variety of pieces of information. And I also went above and beyond. I called up people at the Albuquerque center to just to make sure that somebody had the email before the 45-day deadline. And I made some notes. A gentleman who need not be named, because I'm sure he was doing his job and doing it well, told me the following, that the occurrence apparently happened from around the area of where they talked about Las Vegas, Nevada, excuse me, New Mexico, all the way to the Drake area of Arizona, which is south of the Grand Canyon. It was about 363 nautical miles. That made sense, because when I went on the ADS-B on Flight Radar 24, the aircraft that made the most sense, December 21st, was when this happened, was Delta Flight 771, 767-400. Flew exactly the route that they were talking about there. So when I looked at that, you know, how fast was it flying? It said 460 knots, and I'm not clear whether that was airspeed or ground speed, but it was about 360 nautical miles as the crow flies between the endpoints that the FAA guy told me about. So that made sense. Also, the FAA guy said there was something called a mandatory occurrence report that was written up on this, because they too recognize this as unusual, even back when it happened. And that there was a recording of possible primaries. It may have been a cluster of primaries. And there was a report saying it was four vehicles with red and white flashing lights. So this is a developing story. If I get a whole lot of information from FOIA, that'll be a good thing. If I get no information from FOIA, knowing what I know now, that's also a telling thing. I don't know what this is. I've never heard of 25 UAE drones, whatever, at 34,000 feet following an airliner.
Just for our audience, when the controller has a primary target, that says that the radar beam has struck whatever the object is and returned basically naked. There is no data tag, so you don't know what identification there is, whether it's a Delta Airlines airplane 767-400 with a specific call sign, specific altitude, and ground speed. It just comes back as something's out there, not sure what it is, not sure what altitude it's at, but, you know, in reporting it, they would say, if it was the air traffic controller, you've got a target or you've got traffic at 1 o'clock, 3 miles, altitude unknown. So this, it is quite interesting. And now you have 25 returns like that, that are unknown. That is very strange. And again, just, you know, jumping on the bandwagon with that, there was a recent article about the fact that a business jet, a Gulfstream 550, flying at 27,000 feet, struck an unidentified or unknown, quote, metal object at 27,000 feet, sufficient enough to cause damage and cause an engine to shut down, forcing the crew to make a precautionary landing. Again, what's at 27,000 feet? What is just hovering up there, hanging out up there, flying up there that we don't know about? Because again, the FAA, if it's painted as a primary, okay, that at least validates that something was there. If it had a specific data tag, then we can identify it. But the article that we've all read said the FAA acknowledged that the occurrence did happen. Question is, what was it that happened? And, we've got very credible people, pilots, both in the military and the civilian world, reporting whether it's an unidentified flying object or a UAS or drone, as it's known. I mean, it doesn't matter. The fact is, what are we doing about it? Because this seems to be happening on a more frequent basis, and that really needs to be ferreted out. The article that I read about the encounter at 27,000 feet is, yeah, the FAA acknowledged it, but it didn't say what they were doing about it.
You know, I don't know that we can say it's occurring on a more frequent basis, because it's only recently that the stigma that pilots have, a self-imposed stigma about afraid to reporting because the general public or even their peers think they're crazy. But now that there's a more general acceptance that something's going on, more and more people are coming forward. And Greg, you did a good job of explaining what the primary hit is. But for our audience, most people don't realize that every airplane flying with a transponder sends back information, not just a radar hit, but sends back a calling card. Hey, this is Delta 234. We're at 34,000 feet. We're flying in such a speed. So there's information on that tag that helps the air traffic controller do its job. Right? So when that's missing, that calls into question, what are you looking at?
Especially at those altitudes. Not every aircraft has a transponder. We know that some of the antique aircraft and some of the smaller aircraft like Piper Cub and a Taylor craft and things like that that don't have electrical systems may not have this. And so they may or may not show up as a primary at low altitudes and things, but we're talking at altitude. And that's the biggest concern, John, is these 27,000 feet, 34,000 feet. I mean,
it's not easy to get up there.
Yeah. And I think, Todd, you did some research that, the Reapers of the world and the Global Hawks and all those kinds of drones, while they do operate in those high altitudes, they aren't very fast. And you sure wouldn't see them in numbers of 25 in a pack chasing an airplane.
And this brings up all sorts of issues, amongst them a clear national security issue, which brings to mind NORAD. Was NORAD notified? Was NORAD sending up anything? Or was NORAD looking elsewhere and didn't find out about this until they saw the database like I did? I don't know.
And I can't imagine that we don't have eyes in the sky at 110 or 120 miles up that are watching the airspace. And, I mean, come on. New Mexico, it's not a whole heck of a lot of traffic flying. And this was, of course, at night. I don't know what time at night, but
it would have been around 9 o'clock mountain local time at night on the Saturday before Christmas. So the likelihood there's a big organization with a lot of their employees out flying things on the big shopping night before Christmas. Unlikely.
Yeah. So if you're at 34,000 feet and there's 25 objects in a close cluster, you would think that something would have been able to see the close cluster other than the pilots who reported it.
You know, and even though New Mexico and Arizona, Nevada, they're all wide open spaces, essentially, with hundreds of miles sometimes between cities, right? There's an awful lot of military stuff in those areas. You know, and even California. I can, in my ancient history, back in the 80s, I used to ride off the road motorcycles, and the strange airplanes that I saw flying in the hills north and east of Edwards Air Force Base. There's one in particular I have a good look at, and I have yet to see an airplane that looked like it. So they fly all sorts of unusual things over those remote military bases and the general public will never even know about.
Are you sure that when you were riding those motorcycles, you weren't riding through some wacky weed that caught fire and you
No,
just
I was
happened to
waiting
be
for you to say, wasn't I riding a horse? Because they didn't have motorcycles invented then.
Now,
But
for those of you who are watching this on the video version, I bet you're not going to see horse trails, but I'm going to flash up a screen grab from Flight Radar 24 that shows the flight track of the flight in question. And it flew near Las Vegas, New Mexico, but it flew essentially directly over Santa Fe, past Gallup, New Mexico, just south of Flagstaff, almost directly over Sedona, Arizona, and over Lake Havasu City. The sighting took place all along that route. And if it was seen from the air, it's likely that people on the ground may have seen something like that. By the way, I looked at the METARs for various airports around the area that night, hours before and hours after. It was a clear night. In fact, I'm going to do a Freedom of Information Act request with NOAA and ask for satellite photos of that part of the United States for several hours to show cloud cover. And the GOES East satellite, I think, is one that had the best view, and they have several infrared bands that are good for finding cloud cover. There was none. So this
Wow.
was a good night for watching something out the window.
Well, why we're going to talk about congested airspace as it relates to the recent mid-air collision in the DC area, and we're going to be doing that in this next show that we're going to drop later this week. When we talk about congestion, having 25 drones of unknown size in the vicinity of a Boeing 767, I think that's congestion. If these kinds of things start to happen at various altitudes, especially low altitude, what kind of danger does that pose for not only just commercial traffic going in and out of big airports, but we have EMS helicopters, we have police helicopters, we of course have low altitude military operations. And if you're going to saturate a piece of airspace, a very small piece of airspace, because that's apparently what it was for the pilots to be able to at least estimate that there's 25 of these things, whatever they were, in close proximity, you know that it's a very confined area. What does that do for congestion? But bigger yet, as far as jeopardizing safety, how do we implement any kind of collision avoidance policies, procedures, practices, maneuvers, whatever, if you don't know what it is that you're trying to avoid?
A lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, to say, you know, yeah, we know that it happened, but what? I mean, what kind of investigation are you doing? And again, to come out a month afterward and go, oh, yeah, we're sorry. It was authorized. It's the FAA doing testing, and it's a bunch of hobbyists. Really? And you really think that a sophisticated public is going to buy that? I don't think so. I mean, you got to be straight with them. It, you know, if you don't know, you don't know. But that's the whole purpose of an investigation.
When I first heard of this from Todd, one of the first things that jumped into my mind, it was the recollection of years ago when we were training our fighter pilots out there in California and Nevada, and they were making unauthorized gun runs on civilian airplanes, testing their gun sights, how closing in on them, and actually flying very close to those commercial airliners. And I wonder if we're not back into that again. The military stopped it at that time, but I wonder if we're back into it with a new generation of ground pilots instead of pilots in the air.
Well, you bring up a good point, John, because when I was with the NTSB, I investigated several of those events. We had several military Air Force jets run intercepts on commercial airliners. They were running silent. That is that they didn't have a transponder on. But the TCAS systems in the airplanes did warn the civilian flight crew that, hey, you got traffic, you know, in close proximity. And the military guys were running intercepts on these commercial airliners, like you said, to see how close they could get, whether they were practicing identification or whatever, the fact is that a couple of the events that I ended up investigating, because the crew didn't know what was going on, they started to take evasive action. And, you know, that right there jeopardized safety. So, you know, again, it's one thing to have an unknown, but to come up with some lame excuses that it was authorized or it's a testing. Great. Tell us what the test is so that we know to avoid the area, because we sure don't want a close encounter with it.
And in my opinion, the president was underserved by whoever gave him advice, either the advice to have such a lame excuse or straight up lying to him. One of the two is the most likely outcome. And if the average person, and certainly a lot of the folks who are aviation professionals, the political mayors and whatnot who are asking questions about this, I have not seen one of them come on camera and say, oh yeah, I like that explanation. We can rest easy now. This is inadequate and unacceptable.
Well,
a politician lying to us? I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in your day, John, when you were listening to Abraham Lincoln, you know, he was not lying, Lincoln. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to pay for that comment. So.
But, and one last point on comments and UAP. I'd like to thank all the hundreds of people who commented on our interview we did a few weeks ago with the sailplane pilot who had the UAP encounter. It really opened my eyes, that interview plus the comments, as with pilot mental health and crew mental health as a possible side effect of encountering something unknown. Doesn't matter if it's from the planet Zeta Reticuli or some, you know, rogue company flying a test object. Having something like that happen, considering doing evasive action, even if you don't take the evasive action, could leave you shaken. And I can't but help but imagine a young pilot early in their career having the you-know-what scared out of them 20, 30 hours into their flying career and walking away from aviation because of it. So, these unknowns, let's identify them. Or if we can't identify them, let's characterize the behavior through a whole lot of data so we can come up with some reasonable advice to give to pilots should they have certain kinds of encounters.
Yeah, you know, it would have been interesting, Todd, that, I mean, you know, that 7-6, I think you said that those 25 objects followed the airplane for almost an hour. Why didn't somebody scramble the jets out of Hill or out of Albuquerque to go see, hey, let's run an intercept on this and see if these things are really out there?
Now, that would be a great thing to FOIA certain organizations, but a lot of military and secret stuff is exempt from FOIA. So I'm focusing my efforts on things around the military that might have been associated with it. So any sort of report that was written, any sort of organization that was called. In fact, there is another organization that I didn't know about until I researched this, the Defense Event Network, or Domestic Event Network, where if the FAA sees something really, really unusual, potentially harmful to the nation, that other organizations are called in and talk about this immediately. So if there was and I asked if there was any sort of call out to that organization for this event. So there are ways to get to the information without breaking any laws, without violating any security oaths. But the one thing I would tell people is keep looking and assume that it's going to be difficult or impossible to find documentation that explicitly says, oh yeah, it was a UFO. So think of it this way. If the event happened and someone's going to talk about it, but talk around the sensitive stuff, what sort of thing would they say? What sort of characteristics come with something that should draw your attention? Finding a drone at 25,000 feet, that should draw your attention. Having something the size of a beach ball with green lights on it pass 2 feet over your wing, 15,000 feet over Lubbock, which is actually another event I looked at, if I remember the location correctly. I said to myself, that's either the luckiest balloon that just happened to be 2 feet over a wing of a plane at night in West Texas somewhere, or it's something else. And I thought, is it a balloon? Well, I did some calculations. A balloon the size of a beach ball could carry a payload, including the balloon envelope, about the size of four AA batteries. So could you build something that's a balloon, four AA batteries covered in green lights that can get up to 12,000, 15,000 feet? It's possible, but highly unlikely.
Yeah. Well, with that, John, I will leave you with our last word.
And as usual, I ask all of you that are going to go flying that before you leave the hotel or your house, do a good session of pre-planning. Make sure you check the weather, where you are, where you're going, and everything in between. When you get to the airport, do it again. If it doesn't agree, then dig in even deeper. When you get out to the airplane, do a thorough pre-flight. We're still seeing incidents and accidents where pre-flights are just not done properly. I've seen a few that they didn't have enough information to bring on a podcast, but it was clear that they were very careless in the pre-flight that they were doing. And after you get in the air, put that head on the swivel. We've got a million new people out there flying. You know, everybody wants to be an airline pilot. They're all out there building time. And it's an awful crowded sky around some of our training airfields. So keep that head on a swivel so you don't get involved in somebody else's accident. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.